Okay, so we're going to do a caller right now.
Okay, great.
This is a little different. This is, for a while now, we've been doing this for about 6 months, and every call has been something to do with either relationships, love, or... But now we are actually kind of... we've expanded it. So now we are doing relationships, not just romantic relationships, but all types of relationships, whether it's with
great.
Family or
that's good.
Coworkers. So you are a guinea pig. This is the first time we are going to try a call. But something other than romantic relationship, and let's see.
Sim,
keep talking. I'll cut this part out.
Keep going. You don't have to cut it out necessarily.
No, no, no. Sim, keep talking while I fix this part.
Our listeners want to hear how you fuck up all the time.
No.
We do have a running.
I thought I was going to talk way more about my sex life than this. And I totally,
really?
Yeah, I did.
We've been trying to, like, I don't know.
To calm down on the sex life.
A little
bit. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I mean, I don't know. I don't know. Have we been, I don't know if it's actually been conscious.
Sorry?
Oh, sorry. So you can only focus
he's
on one thing.
He's focusing on getting that. Yeah, that's good.
But do you want to talk about your sex life? Let's talk about your sex life. Okay. How often do you like to have sex, James Gunn?
in a long-term relationship, every other day, I find it.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. It's always every day, and then it's maybe a couple times a day, and then it's
every other day. Well, that's a lot, though. You're directing a movie.
My girlfriend's shooting a TV show in Memphis right now, so I can't do that. Well, I guess I could, but I couldn't do it and feel good about myself because I'd be having sex with people other than my girlfriend.
Do you ever feel guilty if you've gone... Because we talk a bit about on our podcast about how there's a different kind of sexual pressure put on men, of course. I mean, it's just different. But do you ever feel like if you don't have sex, if you're not like all over your girlfriends, that you feel less of like...
Oh, yeah. Yeah. If you don't have sex and then you feel like you're not that...
Well, yeah, because we talk about this as how I have a lot of friends, female friends, that feel kind of blue when they're... If they have a higher sex drive than they're... husbands or boyfriends.
I think that's a pretty common thing.
I think so, you know? Too, but we never talk about it.
Well, and also it's like it's always like one or the other is going to have a higher sex drive.
Right.
So it's always, it's very, like every other aspect of life, I think it's uncommon that you're going to be exactly evenly matched. And not only that, even if you have exactly the same sex drive, there's going to be times when either one of you want to have sex and the other one doesn't. And so that's going to be a problem. But I do think that for a man, it's, I don't want to say it's more difficult than a woman, but there's certain, physical demands on a man that are, you gotta
right.
perform.
You gotta
and that's
perform.
A lot of,
you gotta get the blood pumping.
Yeah. Yeah. So that can be a difficult thing.
But I think it's unfortunate that we don't talk about it, as much as we should, because I think that it makes both parties feel bad when there's the societal expectation of a man supposedly, in a woman, the old sort of standby of what you see in the sitcoms back in the day of like a man, like, I want to have sex with you. And she's like, I have a headache. And you sort of internalize that.
You think it's supposed to be.
Right.
Yes. I think that's totally true. So you think that you're a failure either as a man or as a woman when it is the other way around, which is just as likely to be as the other way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I don't know. We're going to start the hashtag. I don't even know what a hashtag is. I don't even fucking know what a hashtag is. I don't know what a hashtag discussion is. I don't understand what the thing is.
I also think that does a spiral. That's a spiral then, because then the dude, if the dude feels uncomfortable, then he's going to be more uncomfortable and be less likely to feel desire or the woman. I mean, either way, it's going to be exactly the same thing. It's going to be very, very difficult no matter what.
And as a woman, you internalize it. You're like, oh, I'm not hot enough. He's not thinking the, whatever.
And I think we feel rejection around sex so easily anyway. Yeah. It's so easily to feel rejected, whether you're a man or a woman. And if you make a move towards your partner and they're like, then you're like, oh, I suck. I'm fucking ugly.
But see, my argument though would be that men are a little more emotionally adjusted to the idea of rejection.
I'm not.
Well,
I hate
you're
it.
You're a good man.
That's
James.
Good. I think it's terrible.
No,
How
do you handle rejection?
I don't like it. I mean, how does anybody handle rejection? It's like I feel very uncomfortable with being rejected. I have a thing with my entire life where, and this is like taking out of sex into writing, which is probably just a much easier thing for me to discuss. But like when I was younger, you know, I would write a screenplay, I would show it to somebody and they'd say to me, it's really good. And I'd go into a depression because I'm like, they didn't say it was great.
Right.
If they don't tell me it's great and they don't tell me it's the greatest thing ever, I feel like a failure. And I think that's the same is true about sex, unfortunately. If I don't feel like I've just given that woman the best orgasm of her life and she's like, her eyes are bleeding, then I feel like I've totally not, I suck. You know, it's all competitive
but
to
me. But that's so interesting because it kind of goes back a little bit to what you were saying about how you kind of were proactive in your defeat. You were rejecting the industry before you got Guardians, before it could reject you.
I think that's true. I also think I just really, I just thought that the amount of big director jobs were so few and far between that I was doing that. It was also pretty logical because, you know, now there's only, you know, the studios put out a few movies a year where they used to put out 25.
Yeah. I went through the same thing, James. I wanted to, after I had Jack, I felt like I wasn't getting auditions. I wasn't getting the roles. You know, I went from being able to produce and star in The House Bunny, which was a big coup for me. And then sort of the jobs were kind of just drying up. And I thought, well, maybe the town views me as a mom and maybe a has-been and I want to make sure that I read the cues. I don't want to be like lingering in the industry before. And so I, and Chris's career was going well. So I, after, you know, 4 months in of Jack's life, I was like, you know, I think I'm going to step back. I'm going to be a stay-at-home mom. And I, you know, maybe I'll do some small town theater here and there so I can satisfy my artistic needs or whatever. But I really wanted to make sure that I was one step ahead of getting rejected.
Yeah, I get that.
Then, you know, I got mom and sort of anyway.
I think I'm like that in relationships. Yeah, I think that I would be like that in relationships. Yeah. I'm like, I'm not going to get rejected. Yeah. It's not going to happen. So let's get out of here.
I see the signs. And then your partner's like, what signs? There's no signs.
There's no signs. Yeah.
But anyway, sex. Okay, Sam, are you ready?
No, whenever I want to. Oh, okay. I'm enjoying this conversation so much. So,
but I love it that I don't know. I just think that I want it talked about more. Sort of the idea that the different kinds of societal pressure that we've been sort of ingrained, especially people our age. I don't know what people in their 20s. I don't know. A friend of mine told me that who's in her 20s told me that like all her girlfriends are totally comfortable with having sex with like many, many, many people. They don't really, which I love. I love that idea. If I could have that kind of, I just wasn't raised to have that kind of openness towards,
towards
sexuality and not take it to an emotional place.
Right.
I do. I just can't help it.
Yeah. I was always comfortable with whatever. I don't think I'm comfortable with, I don't know if having many partners is the same as being comfortable with sex. You know what I'm saying? Because I think I've always been comfortable with having many partners, when I'm single. That doesn't mean I still have issues. I was raised Catholic. I was taught sex was bad, basically. So I don't know how much of the many partners actually was a reaction to those feelings in the first place, just taking it in a different direction, if that makes sense.
Oh, completely.
Yeah.
Completely. Yeah. No, I was not raised very religious at all, but I was definitely like, my mom was raised in an environment where virginity was prized.
Yeah.
And so she raised me like that. Like,
it's interesting.
Your virginity is of the utmost importance.
It's always interesting though, because lots of people are raised like that and they just don't listen.
I didn't listen.
Yeah.
but I did though. I didn't.
You listened to parts of it.
I listened, it ingrained something in me that if I had a daughter, and I love my mom and she did an unbelievable job, especially considering her circumstances, with what she was raised with. But if I had a daughter, I wouldn't raise her
in exactly that same way.
No, I wouldn't say. I would want a little bit more of like a help, because for so long I wasn't happy in sex.
Yeah.
Because I felt I was so blanketed with guilt.
I was talking about this in, with my, my driver and my associate producer, Simon. We were driving the other day, and I think that there was a time, and this isn't totally true, but there was a time when I was very late in life and I had sex with this woman. And I went to the shower and started crying because I was like, I think I enjoyed sex for the first time. I think I think that until that point, it had been 100% about pleasing whoever was there. Because I am like so show business to my core that I think it was very difficult for me in sex to be like, hey, I this is such a weird thing for a man to say, but it's so, I think I can enjoy this too. You know, I think it was, I was always just completely focused on being the best. That enjoying it as a process wasn't something on my mind. And it was, it was pretty late in life.
Well, you kind of have to, with sex, you have to shut off the active parts of your brain, which is really hard for me. And you have to sort of tap into that thing that happens when you're almost like an athlete or something. Like, you have to release everything else and be, right? Like, become sort of... I don't know. Get to that base.
I think I was able to do that, but I think it was too much like being an athlete. I think it was like playing football. So it was like, just, I'm just doing the best job. I'm keeping my eye on the prize and just doing the best job possible. There was no thought of my own pleasure in the process at all.
So how did it feel?
This is a crazy thing to talk about.
No, but how did it feel the first time you figured it out? Like, oh my God, I can really enjoy this.
It was amazing.
But
I mean,
did it change sex for you after that?
It changed sex for me. Yeah,
do you think it was about her, or was it just just the time in your life?
I think it was the time in my life. Yeah, I think it was the time in my life. I think it was, part of it was her, but a lot of it was just, I was ready for that.
Yeah.
And I think that because I've worked so hard my entire life, like I started working, I'm like, I didn't have a regular, I didn't have a regular experience with any of those things because the whole time I was just completely focused on being successful. And that's what I did with my entire life. And then there came a point in my life when I was like, that's all I've done. I never did those things that other kids did when they're 19 and 20 years old and go to school and just have a lot of fun. Because even back then I was so focused on being successful that's what I did. And I think there was a time when I sort of experienced my college years, you know, in my late 30s, you know.
But that's the kind of the amazing thing about LA is that it draws people like that, like you and like Chris and Sim, and like, because it takes so much hustle and so much it takes so much ingenuity to figure out. There's no, you know, it's always, when people ask me, oh, how you know, my daughter wants to become an actress or whatever, or like, what would you recommend? It's like, well, audition for community theater.
Yeah.
You know, like this, there's no ladder. There's no this. There's no special number that I can give you that's like ding. And it's truly, it takes so much because there's so much rejection, so much drive. I was always an outsider too. And I do, and I feel like that is, it's like you owning your own business, you know, but it is something that you have to have.
It is owning your own business.
Yeah.
It really is. Yeah. 'Cause that's what each one of us has, our own little business. None of us are, we loan our companies out to productions or TV shows or whatever, but it is us.
And I was always very much, I've talked about this on the show, that I didn't have a lot of friends growing up. I started acting when I was 9. That was sort of my world. I kind of got made fun of it. You know, kids would make fun of me because I wasn't a part of their world. And I didn't know how to be either when I tried. It was a miserable attempt. And then I just ended up, I've talked about this before, like hovering around D+, C- social status.
Yeah. Like, I was exactly the same. Exactly the same, especially in my younger years, you know. Before adolescence, once dating and women came into the picture, I was better at it. Like, I was better at that aspect of it, but I was not good at the social game and I wasn't good at sports. So that was a huge thing for a young boy who was living in semi-rural Missouri at the time, you know?
Yeah. All right. Well, fascinating stuff. James, you're amazing. Okay. So we're going to do this caller.
Thank you.
And I don't know anything about the caller.
Oh.
So we're learning about this together.
Okay, good.
We're just going to give said caller your address.
Wow, come on over.
James, you're just fantastic, though. I just truly, I can't thank you enough for doing this.
I think you're fantastic.
Hello.
Katie.
Hi, Sims.
Hey, Katie.
Hi, so, Katie,
Anna's here.
Hi, Anna.
And James Gunn, the director of Guardians of the Galaxy and Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2, currently in production, is here with us right now as well.
Hi.
Oh, cool. Hi.
Hi, Katie.
Hi, everybody.
Thanks for submitting a question.
So, Katie.
Oh, no problem.
Katie, you recently reconnected with your birth mom, and now you need some advice. Tell us what's going on.
So, about 2 years ago, my mom, so I don't want to sound really like stuck up or anything, but just to clarify, whenever I say mom, I'm going to mean my adoptive mom,
mm-hmm.
and then I'll just refer to Kim as Kim. But my mom was diagnosed with cancer, and it was really scary, and I didn't have any family history. And for a while, my husband had been bugging me, saying I should, not I should, but he's like, aren't you interested in knowing who she is, what she's like? So after that health scare, I decided to contact her. And she actually reached out to me the day after my wedding. So we've been communicating for about a year now, and she's just been so eager and so, she's very nice. She wants to get to know me. She says like she loves me and stuff, but I'm not there. I don't feel like I know her that well. I've only known her for a year, and she's kind of just a stranger to me. So I'm not sure what to do. She's tried inviting herself to some of our like family functions, and my parents don't really want that, and I don't really want that either. Like I haven't told anyone other than my immediate family and friends.
Katie,
about
I think
her.
It's you might. Can I give advice?
Yeah.
Yeah. Please.
So,
that's why I called.
Okay. I have a lot of adopted people in my family, and And I think that the main rule of thumb is there is no rule with this type of stuff, but except for this one rule, which is it's about you. Even though you're a full adult, you're still a child in this situation. You're still talking about someone who's your birth mother and someone else who's your mother. And you need to do what you feel best doing. And if that means you feel guilty by not being in as much contact with your birth mother as she wants, that's completely okay. And if you're looking for somebody to tell you that that's okay, that's completely okay. That is not your responsibility. Yeah. Your responsibility is not her. Well, your responsibility is you.
Let me ask you this. Do you like Kim as a person? Would you say choose her as a friend or?
I don't know. I don't know. I don't think I look like her at all. I don't really act like her.
Does your mom feel, and your mom sounds like an amazing person. Do you ever pick up on any undercurrent of your mom feeling a little bit, threatened at all? Yeah.
Yeah. I think, at first it was more my mom. Like I actually did meet them. I went out west and met them. And we spent the week. I brought my husband with me, so I wasn't by myself. And it was nice. And I see how some of my personality, I get that from her a little bit. I kind of look like her other daughters somewhat. But other than that, I don't feel like any kind of connection. But I didn't tell my mom originally.
That's not a very deep connection to feel like you kind of look like her daughters.
But you know what's tough?
Well, yeah, but I felt like maybe if I did look like her, I'd be like, oh, yeah, that is my birth mom. You know, but I don't.
So,
it's weird.
So, Katie, I feel like what you are in a really tough position because you have two really strong parties wanting a lot from you. You have your birth mom wanting a relationship suddenly that's fulfilling something. You know, she wants the daughter that she probably for, but she wants a daughter that she hasn't spent a lot of time with in her life. She wants that. And then you've got your mom who is feeling vulnerable and scared partly because of the health scare and also just because she just doesn't want to lose you. You're married. I don't know if you have kids, but you probably have a lot of time.
No, and that's another thing. I don't have children, so I feel like I can't empathize with her. I couldn't fathom what Kim has gone through. But actually, my mom and her are becoming friends.
Oh, this is key.
This
is good news. Sorry, I didn't mean to yell. This is great, Katie. This is the key, I think. I think
this is the key. Okay.
This is the key. Like getting, if gently encouraging a friendship between these two women who love you very, very much, I think will be hugely healthy for you.
But Katie doesn't sound like she wants anything to do with it.
Exactly. I don't know if that's the way to go here.
Because they don't. There is no magic. I mean, there is no magic connection between birth mother and child. I mean,
you thought
you'd feel like what mothers say they feel like when they see their child come out and they feel this instant connection, that you'd feel this connection. And instead, to you, she's just a person. This woman that wants to be a part of your life, and you're like, I got a mom.
Well, let me first just say that I think James is completely right in that, Katie, this is, you have to be really selfish in this journey, that it really is about you. But as a mom, I don't know. I can't imagine the heartbreak of going through. I know. I don't want to, Katie, put any pressure on you, because you do not need any more pressure in your life. But I do, I can empathize a little bit with Kim a little bit, because I would just, I just can imagine how heartbreaking it would be. I kind of want to, I feel like I'm welling up a little bit right now thinking about it. But
Well, that's the thing. I feel like, okay, this woman, like, she opted to give me up for adoption and go through with the pregnancy, and I owe her. And I feel like I need contact.
You don't owe her.
So, you know, I'm the one that initiated this. She didn't go out and search for me.
But I think that's the thing that's in your way, is you feeling like you owe her.
Yeah.
Because I think you could make a more rational, compassionate decision in this situation if you realized you don't owe her any more than you owe to any other human being as a compassionate human being.
Right.
So I think that's, you know, this is not so different from any situation where you're putting pressure on yourself, and then you're not able to, you know, either enjoy it or not enjoy it as you would really be, because you're making yourself feel you're supposed to be a certain way, but you're not supposed to be a certain way.
Yeah.
And you keep saying it's weird, and it's not weird. It sounds very normal considering what the situation is.
Good.
But here's what I would like to think of, Katie. I feel like here's what I like to think. If your mom can get comfortable with the idea of Kim seeing you guys two or three times a year, if you guys want that, it seems to me that would be an amazing gift, if you felt like it, that you could give to Kim.
Actually, my mom met her a few months ago, but the real conundrum now is my dad and brother do not want to meet her. They don't even want to talk to her.
Oh.
My dad barely accepted her Facebook friendship request. So I feel like I'm being torn between the two. I don't know how to gently tell her, listen, you need to back off. Because I do. I feel like I owe her. I know I don't. But
no, you don't. You don't owe her anything.
But I think, can't you just, you know, are you in email contact with her?
I'm sorry?
Are you in email contact with her or text? Or?
Oh, yeah. We actually,
you might just have to
traded cell phone numbers. So, like, and we'll Skype occasionally, maybe like once or twice a month.
You might just have to, telling people, this is why I'm happy that there's text and email, but actually composing a message that's kind, that is compassionate, that tells her the truth of the situation, which is the truth that your father and brother are uncomfortable with it, which she very possibly could understand. And being able to tell her that in a kind way through text or email so that she's able to process that on her own without feeling pressured by you sitting there staring at her while you say it
could be
a good thing.
And maybe you could also add something like, Kim, you know, because of all these circumstances and because of all the things, I don't necessarily want to cut off a relationship with you at all, but I need to ask for you to, let me be the proactive member of this and wait till I reach out to you, or at least let me be the leader of this relationship. And then hopefully she'll sort of back off. And if you later on feel like coming to her again, it's all on your terms though, Katie. And I just, it kind of breaks my heart that you feel guilt and torn because I don't know. That's what women, we kind of do that too. We are really good doing that kind of thing. But
it's also, I think, good to separate because you sound like you have a lot of drama of other people's feelings. You have your birth mother, you have your mother, you have your father, you have your brother. Mm-hmm. They all have separate emotions that are separate from yours.
And her husband.
And your husband. And I think a good place to start would be saying, outside of all these people, because you're worrying a lot about what they all feel and what they all think, for all of them, outside of all of them, with just yourself, how do you feel about this situation? That doesn't mean you need to act in any specific way, but at least you'll have a core of knowing where you come from, what you feel, and what you think about the situation before you start worrying about everybody else. But you're kind of making both those decisions simultaneously.
That's why I asked her if she liked Kim. But I also, I think, I feel like there's something deeper in you saying that you don't look like her. Like there's something.
Yeah,
that
I don't know why
something.
That's such a big deal to me, but it is. I'm like, I don't know.
I think it means something deeper. I think
it could be. Do you like, feel? Yeah. I thought it too when she said it, but I was like, is it? But I didn't say anything about it because I thought on the one hand that could mean she's kind of has some tenderness here of something she should acknowledge that maybe she's subconsciously pushing away by going off this very sort of physical thing. The other thing could be that's her way of saying, I don't really want a part of this right now.
Or like look, yeah. Like, or like the disappointment yeah. too of like, of, you know, Katie reached out to Kim. So the disappointment, maybe a little bit of like, I wish we had more in common. I wish I saw, I've been fantasizing about what this person would look
waiting
like.
For that magic
I
moment.
Wish that I had more in common with her than I do. Or,
and I feel like it's almost my way of like justifying that I'm not hers.
Right.
You know, because I don't physically resemble her. So it's like, oh, okay, well, she's not. It's hard to come to grasp the idea that someone else could be my mother, I guess. And maybe I just wasn't really mentally prepared for it.
Yeah. Well, who could be? It's like an impossible thing to prepare for. It's totally impossible. Does your, not to sound too like 1950s, but what is your husband? Does your husband weigh in on this?
Yeah, he was really encouraging. He wanted me to do it if I really wanted to. Mm-hmm. And I think for people who aren't adopted, it's weird for them because they're like, what do you mean you don't know who your birth parents are? Or you don't know who you look like? Or I don't know. But I think he's trying to be on Kim's team a little bit, and he's a little more empathetic to her. Sometimes he says I'm a little mean the way I talk about her because I think I try and like emotionally separate myself from it, but he's very encouraging. He does, you know.
Did you always know that you were adopted?
Oh my God. I've known since I was like 2 days old.
Oh, okay.
Like every time I meet someone, like my fun fact about myself is I'm adopted.
Okay. So your parents were pretty
they want to know what
healthy
you think
about it or
situation.
Whatever. I can't weigh in on what's healthy and not healthy.
Is she talking to her husband right now?
I love that.
Yeah.
What if fascinating.
It sounds like her husband's.
I'm sorry, guys. I couldn't hear anything.
It sounds like your husband's a good guy. I mean, it's he's the one that in the situation is he's got the least to win or lose, other than your own well-being.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
So if there's counsel there in your life, it's probably him. I mean, that's saying that without knowing anything about your relationship, which you never know what those things are. But it sounds.
Do you
positive.
Know? Have you ever heard us, Katie, talk about? I haven't talked about it for a while, but how I don't really believe in what do I not believe in?
Ghosts?
No, it's not healing. Oh my God. What's the term? Closure. Thank you. Thanks, Amy. Closure.
Did we talk about
closure.
This before?
Yeah, you've talked about that before.
Yeah. Oh, thank you.
I guess I'm not paying attention to this
lovely,
podcast.
You're a lovely, loyal listener. but I think.
I pay attention.
But, you know, we think about, like, we all want that idea of closure. For me personally, and I do believe that it's for most people too, that it's sort of an impossible thing to achieve. And so in your case too, this will never be a neat, tidy package, but I think James is right, is that it should be whatever you want it to be and not what anyone else wants it to be. So maybe your father and your brother feel like, oh, they're being replaced. They somehow feel threatened.
Yeah.
Because, and your mom I know just wants the best for you. So she wants you to be happy. So I really think that James is right. I think a long, honest email about how all these things have happened. You're still processing everything. Can you give me some time? And I'll reach out to you. And yeah. What do you guys think?
I think it's really important to take yourself outside of the situation for the moment and remember how fortunate and lucky you are that you have so many people in your life that love and care about
you. And they are possessive of you. I'm possessive of you.
Too many people.
There are so many people out there that don't have that. And
yeah. No, I feel very, very blessed, very lucky.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think that just processing everything, and I don't think you have to give anyone in your life right now any answers because you don't have them yet. And so you don't have to tell your brother or your dad that you're never going to speak to this woman again. You don't have to reassure your mom that she's your own, you know, your only mom. You don't have to do any of that right now at all. I think that you just need to regain control of the situation so you can move forward on your own terms. And I think part of that may be establishing with Kim, like, listen, because of all this, all the emotions.
And you don't think it's like too cold to...
No. If it's done in a loving, you don't have to do it with love, but if it's done in a kind
way.
Truthful,
kind, yeah. Compassionate.
And who wouldn't be able to understand that? Of course, this is going to... And if she doesn't understand it, then that says a lot too.
Yeah, that's true. That's very true.
Well, Katie...
Katie, please, thank you so much for asking us our totally... Well,
this has been one of my favorite calls.
No, me too.
And I appreciate the advice. It's nice to have like a third party who doesn't know me, who aren't trying to tell me what I think I want to hear.
Well, good luck.
So it's nice to get that.
Katie,
thank you guys so much.
Send me an email. Yeah. Let me know when you're ready to. Let me know how it goes because we'd love to.
Yeah, I will.
Yeah, we're gonna have a lot of listeners wanting to hear what happens with you.
Okay.
So when you're ready to follow up,
thank
let
you,
us know.
Your husband, my love.
Okay.
Thanks.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Bye.
Bye. That was awesome. That's great.
Yeah, that was nice. Yeah.
Man, I think, James, you gave great advice.
Mm-hmm. You really did.
You really did.
Well, that's all.
See, you're a natural at this.
Now with Guardians.
Exactly.
I no longer give it. My cat is beating the crap out of my dog.
James, I have one last question before we wrap everything
up. Oh, I got a question about how many programs you have on your...
I need to clean that up. I've been really busy.
His desktop has got 1,000 things on it.
It really does. It's really embarrassing. I know. I have to minimize. This is the smallest the icon it goes. It's
my cat's on your back, Anna.
I love your cat. Hi, Emily. Oh, okay. Then two questions. Why Emily?
It just seemed like her name. She was a stray. She was outside my house crying in the bushes. And she came in and she was my cat and it just seemed like her name. So,
okay. My last question is this. I've witnessed you as a director, from afar, and you're a great director who commands respect because there's certain directors that don't necessarily, for whatever reason, command as much respect, and you respect certain aspects of their creative brain, but what I wanted to ask you was, what does it take to be a good leader, and what are your thoughts about leadership? I'm sort of always fascinated by leadership.
I think it's very different. I was talking about with this with our script supervisor Marty yesterday. I was talking about the different ways directors go about directing. And this is directing. This isn't leadership, I guess.
No, but it's the same. It's the same.
But, you know, some directors are very... They direct people. They have different people in different departments. And it's not... They're better... They have their storyboard artists who set up the shots. And they have their actors who do the acting. And they're very good at choosing. And very good at pushing in slightly different directions. But they aren't as much about the... I guess you're always about a vision, but they aren't about the creative, imaginative aspect of directing. They're really about almost a producerial version of directing. There's some great directors like that, especially on big, big movies. For me, it really is about having that central concept and sticking to it. And it's about that and then pushing people past the point of where they think they're able to go. And so it's very much like being a, you know, physical trainer, and you're pushing people to do those extra reps. And with every single department, whether it's a production designer that's bringing me new designs, and I keep pushing them harder and harder and harder, either to get to something that I can't imagine that's greater than what they have, or to exactly what I imagine that they're just not there yet, or whether it's an actor who I just keep pushing harder and harder until they get to that emotional moment or that true moment or that, you know, funny moment. And so I think that it's really about just pushing yourself past, for directing, past the point. Then I have to push myself past the point where I think I'm able to go constantly.
Well, I think it definitely says a lot in your work, because you do create, you have characters in your big Marvel movies that, like we talked about earlier, that are really nuanced, that are really, and you, Chris was, during the making of the first movie, we talked a little bit about how much he respects you in general, but how much he also respected your idea in the world that you've created, how, respecting the rules and how you've thought about the minutiae.
Yeah.
And how you've thought about, like, okay, we can't break these rules. We can't, like, and I find that fascinating, that you have, like, filled your brain with the rules of the world.
Yeah, people always ask me on Twitter these weird things about, oh, where do you get Quill's batteries? And I'm like, well, it's all thought out. There's nothing that very rarely has there ever been a moment where somebody's asked me a question and I said, oh, I have to make it up now, or, you know, I don't know. Usually I always know what those things are, because it's all very logical. It's not a real world. I mean, it's Guardians of the Galaxy is not true science fiction. It really is space opera. It's space fantasy. But it still has to be completely consistent and of itself within that
world. Well, that's what makes you emotionally invested in it. I have there's an example of a movie for me, I don't know if I should say it, that breaks the rules, that made me crazy. And I really wanted to like it, but I could not stop thinking about the rule breaking. Should I say what it was?
Tell us what it is.
Okay. It was World War Z.
Oh, yeah.
Which is a movie I really wanted to like. I like all the actors. I loved the big, but I couldn't quite understand the rules of the zombies. It felt like, why do their legs move really fast, but their arms are just flopping around?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I don't know. And like the language I don't know. Do you want to tell me later?
I can't. I'll tell you later. Yeah. Because I like the director a lot, and I actually think it's a good movie. But when they step outside of the rules, it really bothers me so much that I can't watch the movie.
Maybe with World War Z, I didn't understand the rules.
Arm rule somewhere that we don't understand. You know, that's the main thing about zombies, is they got fast legs and floppy arms.
But a compliment to you is that I love it that you respect the rules. You know, as an audience member, it means you can really invest.
Yeah.
And that's...
Oh, I believe in those characters. And I mean, you asked me about being a good leader or a good director. I mean, I think one of the first things is you have to truly believe in it. You have to believe in the characters. You have to believe in the project you're doing. And I've never been able to do something that I don't believe in. I've never, you know, I can't do, you know, I get offered commercials and they pay you exorbitant amount of money for 2 days of shooting. I just truly cannot bring myself to do it, because it's just not me. And it's like, I make enough money. I'm not going to be able to pay the rent. It's just, there's things that just bother me. I can't do it. I can't go in and direct a script for a lot of money that I don't believe in. It's got to be something that I completely care about and believe in.
Well, thanks to you, James, because my husband now has a healthy income. I hopefully can adopt some more of that mentality. I won't whore myself out to the industry anymore.
Yes, I know. Yes, you don't make any money on your own. Without Chris, you'd be impoverished and living on the streets. money. Just need to supplement the income with this tin cup.
No, but I definitely
can't pay the rent on my apartment in Silver Lake.
But no, I've totally been like the whore of Hollywood. Like, I feel like I've totally taken jobs for money.
It's not about taking jobs for money, but did you hate it?
Well, there's definitely jobs I've taken, like, because I want to continue to live in I want to be able to pay my mortgage. You know what I mean? Like,
I love making money. I just don't like doing things for money that I don't want to do. And when I was a screenwriter, I started doing this thing where you get paid, $100,000 a week or whatever. And this is when I didn't have that much money to like rewrite a script. And at that time, that was a lot of money. And I did it. And I'm like, I can't stand it. And I won't say it's 100% because of my integrity. A part of it is simply my ego. A part of it was simply writing jokes or whatever for another script and then seeing some other screenwriter get the credit for that.
Oh,
really, yeah. I mean, I didn't like it. So part of it has nothing to do with my integrity. But I don't want to, there's things I don't want to do. And it's just, I get paid well enough. I don't need to go do Mercedes commercial. But not anybody that does, because I know a lot of directors that love doing commercials because, they love trying out new stuff and learning that stuff. And, Darren Aronofsky, who I, respect a great deal, and the Russo brothers, and these guys, they really are good directors who love doing that stuff for different reasons. And because they have fun making the money.
Yeah.
But I am terrible at doing things I don't want to do. I barely graduated from grade school because of the same thing.
Where'd you go to college? I should know this.
No, that's all right. I went to St. Louis University, and then I went to Columbia University for grad school.
That old school, huh? Columbia. And what did you major in?
Psychology, undergraduate psychology, and English undergraduate degree, and but basically psychology, and then a writing degree from Columbia. MFA.
Are you a fan of theme parks?
Yeah, I love them.
Okay, if you could make a movie out of a ride of one of your favorite rides, what would the ride be?
Well,
I'm just thinking about Pirates.
Pirates was like my favorite ride. So if it had to be something, it would probably be Pirates of the Caribbean.
I love it because taps into like the actor character because there were characters on that.
Yes.
Those skeletons were like,
and I love Pirates. I love Black Sails on the Stars. If you've seen that show,
no,
I love it. Oh, it's Pirates. Okay. I love them. I love Pirates so much. So I would do. Right now, I don't really want to do a Pirates of the Caribbean movie, so I don't. I answer these questions on Twitter. Oops. About hey, what movie would you want to do? And then I say, I'd like to do this superhero. And then 15 minutes later, my manager's calling and saying, hey, you just got offered this job. And I'm like, I didn't really want to do that. I'm just trying to think of an answer on Twitter. So it's like in that moment, I kind of wanted to direct that movie, but I didn't really want to direct it.
I think we could come up with. So like 10 years ago, I pitched my agents because this is what I would do. I would call them up like in the morning and be like, I had a great idea last night. And they would like sweetly, indulgently listen to me.
Yeah.
But I was like, Vikings. We got to bring back the Vikings. And now the Vikings are all over the place.
Yeah, Vikings are,
they're all over the place.
I like Vikings too, but not as much as Pirates. I like Pirates more.
I wonder if we
But there's a great, we make Hagar the Horrible jokes all the time on set. About, I was trying to remember, and this is, now I've gone totally off track, but you remember Hagar the Horrible?
No. The comic strip?
He's a cartoon. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and I'm always telling stories about, this great book I read, totally great photographs from that part of the, 1500s called Hagar the Horrible, and we're talking about the history of Hagar the Horrible and his wife and his mean wife, and this is dying, but it's funny on set.
I bet. Well, listen.
Let's not end that way.
Okay, but James,
let's talk about Bukkake.
Yeah, let's go back to Bukkake.
I want you to think of a Viking ride, though, because Vikings now they're all over the place. But
Viking ride.
Yeah. So at some point, we can talk about it later. I just want to plant that seed because I was thinking we could do some kind of
Viking ride.
A Viking ride.
Well, that's a great idea for Disney.
Thanks.
And I know some of the Imagineers. They're the guys that do the rides for Disney World and Disneyland, and they're so cool.
Like,
ooh,
we're on the boat.
Idea.
We get caught in a storm. You get twisted and, turned all about. I don't know. Okay, Viking ride.
Viking ride it is.
But one of the great things about Pirates of the Caribbean is it's not really, the ride part of it is not very much. It really is the story.
Everything
part
around
of it.
It.
That's so
absolutely.
Cool. Yeah, I mean, there's a little going
and
up
the
and
little
down.
Journey. Sure. Yeah.
There's that one part where you go down the waterfall thing. And
yes.
That's it. Right.
I mean, listen, as a kid, I loved Haunted Mansion. Like, it flipped me out. I went there when I was three, and I flipped out. I mean, it was scary. I cried, but I also loved it.
Did you do Tom Sawyer, or what was Robinson, like the Crusoe tree?
Yeah.
Do you remember the Crusoe tree?
Yeah.
They took it down.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Oh, it was awesome.
Is that the one that became Peter Pan?
Maybe. I haven't been there for a while.
Yeah.
Anyway. All right. Hey, James Gunn, thank you so much.
Thank you.
One last favor. We haven't done it. Will you please... I don't know how, if, do you say the word fuck ever?
Uh-huh.
Okay, would you, would you say fuck you, Sim? You can do it however you want.
Fuck you, Sim.
Nice. All right. Well, Traveling Podcast. Thanks, James Gunn.
Follow us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And James Gunn is at James Gunn on Twitter, and I'm sure you have an Instagram as well.
I'm on at James Gunn on Instagram, and I'm actually most active on Facebook, which is facebook.com/JGunn, which
Perfect.
Is the one I like the best.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, James.
Thank you.